Wow, I am live now. First thing is to actually find the URL, copy the URL, paste the URL into the tweet. Now it's tweeted. Now we're proper live. Hopefully we're proper live. If you join in and this sounds terrible, let me know. I am doing this live again this week because I worked out last week that if I do it live, I don't have to do all the editing and everything later on, which is about the last thing I feel like doing at the end of a Friday. So that was good in theory. In principle, I end up, well, it was good theory and principle, same thing. Anyway, in practice, I end up doing it on the boat, and then the sound quality wasn't great, and I just wasn't happy about that, and it just really bugs me when something isn't quite right. What I'm going to do this week, I'm going to do things a little bit reverse. I'm going to do sponsor thing first. So sponsor this week is Duo Security. So Duo has been on here before, which has been great. Sponsorship this week, Duo is focusing on VPNs and MFA, five reasons you should secure your VPN with multi-factor authentication as an additional layer of defense. So there's a guide by Duo Security there. And again, in case you're just like tuning in and you haven't seen the whole sponsor thing background, I used to have ads like the traditional ones where they just embed all of this crap in your website, and it's literally like the way you embed ads is they say, here's a script tag, put it on your website, anything can run, it will be fine. Wasn't always fine. Not even on my own blog was it always fine. Oh, I just muted myself, which is a little bit nasty. Now moving on. Things this week. So I don't have anything of substance this week. Like, there's no one big thing. It's just lots of little bits and pieces, which I thought I'd touch on. And first of all, just in case anyone's looking at the hat and going, why am I wearing an NYPD hat? Is it like a tribute to the first responders in New York? Because I wore this a few weeks ago and someone left me a comment and said, like this was really inappropriate to wear a New York hat when there's bad things happening in New York. Now, I'm not sure how he joined those dots and came to those conclusions. There's a really easy answer why I'm wearing a hat, because I haven't had my hair cut in many, many, many weeks when I probably should have, and I've just come in from the jet ski, and it saved me getting presentable because this is where we are at the moment, right? It's like shortcuts. So no more to it than that. Anyway, I thought I would talk about, first of all, where we're at in Australia with some COVID stuff, and then that will lead us into talking about tracing apps, which will lead us and talk about Bluetooth and a whole bunch of other things. Now, insert, it's the first time I've streamed live from this PC. If my audio sounds crap, let me know, because I hope I'm speaking to this microphone, well, it's this one recording, and not the one that's up there in the webcam, because that would be terrible. So audio should sound good because it's the proper thing like this. So some stats. Now, I haven't actually looked at these today. Sounds good. Thanks, Rob. And I do see your comments coming in too, folks. So if you've got comments or questions, let me know. So I haven't looked at the stats today. I have been like really, really closely watching the empirical numbers, just because I find that, and maybe this is like the, I shouldn't say mathematician or scientist, because I think that would be a bit self-ingratiating, but the analytical side of me is like, if I can get away from the news headlines and all the terrible things that you see in the press and I can just focus on figures, it just, I get clarity. So tracking the COVID underscore Australia, g'day Mike. I'm glad I did this when you're up. Tracking the COVID underscore Australia figures as of today. So where are we at? 3 hours ago. So this is a really, really cool account. If any Aussies are on here and they aren't following COVID underscore Australia, check that out. They're constantly updating stats throughout the day. So we are at, the thing I'm really interested in at the moment is the active cases. So keeping in mind Australia is a country of 25 million people, we have 738 cases, down 27 today, which is good. So we're sort of looking at like how low can we get this thing. So that's nice. We are at 97 deaths, which is on the one hand tragic. On the other hand, to have 97 deaths in a country of 25 million people, we've done extremely bloody good under the circumstances. Now, the COVID Australia Twitter account also runs a website where they give us state-by-state information, and as good as Australia is doing, my home state here in Queensland is doing exceptionally well. So we actually have only 45 active cases in a state of 5 million people at the moment. So I'm going to talk about how our restrictions and things are backing off in a moment. And you got to keep this in mind, because I put a photo or a video or something on Twitter the other day when I was riding my bike down at the beach. And because it's Twitter, some people lost their minds. And they were like, "Oh, you're wearing face masks." And it's like, I don't know exactly what the percentage is. I know there's quite a few zeros after the decimal place, but the percentage of people in this state that actually have it is just, yeah, it's very, very small. So we've got 45 people out of a state of 5 million people that are currently active. We have actually only had 6 deaths, which is amazing. So imagine that, out of a population of 5 million, there's only 6 people that have died. And again, these things are tragic, but in the scheme of things, we've just done exceptionally well. Now, we had an announcement from our Prime Minister today, who I don't think anyone particularly likes, but be that as it may, it's a little bit hard to kind of look at all those figures and then go, "Oh, the guy's done a crap job as well." So, you know, whatever. But he announced some easing of restrictions today, which the states then decide how they're going to implement. And as much as we would normally look at Australia as a holistic unit, the fact that we can't actually travel interstate at the moment unless you get a special exemption means that I'm just basically focused on Queensland, which also is super weird because like 30K down that way and you're over the border, and the border literally runs through between kind of two towns, which makes it really odd in terms of people who live on border towns and they need to come and go. In fact, here's an interesting fact. I was seeing a bunch of cars around with an A4 printed piece of paper in the windscreen and a big letter A and some other writing. And for the first time, I went and had a look at what was on one the other day in a car park. And this is an exemption to be able to travel interstate. But the odd thing, and the reason I thought of everyone here, odd thing about it is that on this exemption paper is the person's name, their phone number, their email address, like a whole bunch of personal information stuck on a big piece of paper inside their car with the number plate facing out. And it's kind of like, well, if you like that car and you want to go and steal it later, don't go and do this, by the way. This is not a recommendation, but it just seemed odd to me to whack a big paper of PII right there in the windscreen. So anyway, we are looking at a three-stage easing, they call it, where each stage, well, certainly stage one and stage two go for 4 weeks each, and stage three, as best I can tell, goes for infinity, or until there is no more COVID-19 or all vaccinated, or except for the anti-vaxxers, and then there'll be another problem. So anyway, stage one kicks in 1 week from today, and that is the headline here for family, friends, and community, is we can have gatherings in home, max 5 visitors allowed from separate households, which is cool because I can get my brother and his wife and his kids to come over again, which I haven't been able to do for a long time. Gatherings of up to 10 people, outdoor, non-contact activity, so we can play doubles again at the tennis court, which would be nice. Personal training, which would be great for my brother who runs a personal training company. Pools, indoor and outdoor. Public spaces and lagoons, parks, playgrounds, libraries, weddings, hiking and recreational activities in national and state parks, which we're meant to be able to do already. I hope so, because I did that last weekend. I'm pretty sure we're meant to be able to do it last weekend. So then under businesses and economy, we've got retail shopping to open again. There are a bunch of retail shops that aren't open at the moment, particularly in some of our – I went to sort of one of the like discount shopping centers the other day hoping to get my son some clothes. No chance. And then also business and economy, 10 people permitted at any one time for dining in restaurants, cafes, pubs, registered and licensed clubs, etc. And that's – like that's a start, right? Like 10 people. So hopefully some of the cafes I might be able to go and have a bit of breakfast sometime. And again, like I don't want to put myself at – undue risk, but also 45 people in a population of 5 million. Like I like those odds. And all of this is still with all the social distancing measures. And then that goes for 4 weeks, and then we get through to the 12th of June, and then we can start having gatherings of up to 20 people, and then there's 20 people at any one time in restaurants, and then you get through to the 10th of July, and then it's a maximum of 100 people. And, of course, all of this is assuming that that things don't go downhill. And I do see these comments coming in. I've seen Abrams and Jafin's here. I'm going to talk about both those things in a moment as well. So anyway, that's where we are. We're heading in a good direction, albeit gradually. And, of course, I just mentioned I came in from the jet ski. We were allowed to start going jet skiing again as of last Saturday. And at the crack of dawn tomorrow, I'm going to be back on my boat going wakeboarding again as well, which I'm really super happy about because I haven't done that. I it's a long story, but I actually haven't done that, I think, since about October. So anyway, that's other things we'll discuss other times. So one of the aspects of this, which has come up in the comments here, and I thought we'd go back to again, is contact tracing apps. So Australia has an app that launched nearly 2 weeks ago now called COVID Safe. This was based on a Singaporean app called Trace Together. Other parts of the world are looking at contact tracing apps as well. Apple and Google have built APIs, building APIs or release APIs for governments and things to build stuff on top of. And I spoke a lot initially about the potential for contact tracing apps insofar as, isn't it awesome, we've all got one of these guys in our pocket and they've got Bluetooth and they've got connectivity to cell towers and they're like little supercomputers that can do all these cool things. Wouldn't it be amazing if the potential of contact tracing could be realized and we could do all of these things that I outlined around privacy and transparency? See, I like the privacy concept of only uploading data if you test positive. So imagine what it's like here. Again, 45 people in a state of 5 million, your chances of testing positive are very, 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 very low. So I'm happy to collect data, which would only get shared if I do. And then if you do, you got to share a whole bunch of data anyway. I saw a comment today from someone around, you know, not liking the idea of digitizing this information. And it's like, if you test positive, you're going to go into a computer somewhere. And there's going to be a bunch of other data about you. And someone made the point, they said, yes, but that's actually done at the state level here in Australia, not the federal level. And I asked the question, so, well, is that better or worse to have like lots of databases about people as opposed to a central database? I don't know. The point is that your stuff's going to get digitized. So in that regard, I was quite satisfied with the privacy position of COVID Safe in particular here in Australia. The challenges, and Jay Fenn's mentioned Jeff Huntley here as well. So Jeff and I talk a lot, and we did this panel together recently. That there's two major issues that have frankly caused me to back off publicly discussing it on Twitter. It's a little bit different here because you get a lot more sentiment and, I guess, density of information than in a tweet. And one of the things is related to government, and then one of the things is related to public. The government bit is they need to do a lot better at the transparency front. So, you know, I said one of the things very early on, I said I'd like to see it open source. Now, we've seen the source because people have decompiled the APKs, but the symbolic gesture of making it open source hasn't happened. There really hasn't been a good mechanism for people to report bugs. One of the things that Jeff has been struggling with, just to ridiculous levels, is things that he and others have found, how do they get reported? It's not that he's out there going, hey, I want bug bounty. You know, like he just wants to find someone to talk to, and that is exceptionally difficult. And there are things worthy of fixing. It's everything from some of the wording's not good through to some of the privacy controls could be better through to massive questions about just the entire functionality of it on iOS. So it's just infuriating because I'm sure there are really nice, good people in government building this thing, and the higher ups are not giving them the feedback channels that they need to engage with people. And I know that these people are sitting there watching people like Jeff just going, oh, geez, with someone just, oh, I'm sorry, guys, but, you know, hands are tied kind of thing. So I would like to see them do a much better job of that. Now, one of the things that then happens on the other side of it, the public side of it, is that people are losing their freaking minds about absolutely batshit crazy inane things. I almost feel like this should be a 5G discussion about does 5G spread COVID-19. But, you know, I mean, one of the things is I don't want my data digitized if I'm positive. Well, you're going to be positive. You're going to have it digitized. This is the way it works. Taking to social media to complain so much about privacy erosions. And it's like, well, you know, the irony of you being on social media talking about concerns about privacy erosions aside, again, it's only if you test positive that you submit the data. And it's not to say that the concerns aren't valid. They are, but they are expressed with such anger and vitriol that I got to the point where I realized that I'd muted more people in the space for a week than what I had in the entire year beforehand, just because there are so many angry pitchfork-wielding individuals that it just became an absolutely unpleasant dialogue. And I don't mind having discussions all day long that are very reasonable and objective, but when people get abusive and vitriolic, That's just not a fun place to be anymore. So between the crazy tinfoil hatters, the people who are just angry and upset, and then the government not handling it well as well, it's just, I think I'll just give it a little bit of a rest and actually try and focus on some other things. Anyway, moving on. What was on my list next? Bluetooth. This was an interesting thing because one of the topics that came up as it relates to many of these different contact tracing apps is how many people are actually running Bluetooth. Because if you don't have Bluetooth turned on and you are dependent on BTLE, so Bluetooth Low Energy, to look at other devices that are around you and communicate, if you got no Bluetooth, then it's not going to work, right? Now, I decided to do a poll because I actually had someone say to me, someone, I can't remember exactly what it was, I just remember thinking that they were reputable and smart and probably had a name like Dr. or Professor. And they said something along the lines of, well, most people have Bluetooth turned off anyway. And that to me just didn't really pass the bullshit test. Now, what I meant by that is that in my mind, Bluetooth, first of all, only works when it's on. Second of all, there's a lot of people out there using Bluetooth headsets. There's a lot of people out there using Bluetooth in their car. And then the other thing that the penny hadn't quite dropped until I asked the question in a poll, which we'll talk about in a moment, is watches. So I've got an Apple Watch. It only can communicate via my phone and back over Wi-Fi and everything else with Bluetooth. If I turn Bluetooth off, it just stops working. So Bluetooth, if you use it at all, you kind of need to leave it on. The practical viability of continually turning it on, turning it off, even if I forget about a watch for a moment, I am on, like I've literally got two different sets of AirPods sitting around here because I use these all the time. And I'm in and out of two different cars the whole time. Even the boat Bluetooth, like if I was turning Bluetooth on and off the whole time, it would drive me nuts. And then there's a question of why. So why would you turn it off the whole time? The security things that have been found in the past, if you're running a modern patched operating system, that's really not something that you should be too worried about today. The battery drain, some people mentioned. I've seen, so I think I might actually collate some of these in a blog post, so I've favorited a few. But a lot of people said, look, the actual battery thing at the moment is just really, really not an issue these days. If you're not actually using it to communicate, it's not like it's sitting there just broadcasting the whole time. And the BTLE stuff for the contact tracing apps would be very, very low overhead. And just as a reference, I've been using the Tile app. So on my keys, I have one of these little Tile units. Been using that for years and years, and they use everyone who's got the app installed as a little Bluetooth beacon. So honestly, I don't think that's an argument either. So to me, the idea that most people leave it turned off just didn't reconcile. So anyway, I asked the poll. I said, I'm interested in what approach people take to disabling it, if at all. Now, option one was always left turned on. Option two was only on when needed. Option three is always disabled. Now, I am conscious that I'm asking an audience that's going to be very predominantly more technical to begin with and actually know about turning it on and off, and also very security conscious. So my expectation was I was going to get a really lowball number for the number of people that turn it off, and it was probably going to reinforce the message of whoever it was that made this point in the first place. And I was actually a bit surprised that 49.1% of people, so let's call it half, said they always left it turned on. 39% said it was only on when needed, and we'll round it out to 12% saying always disabled. So on that basis, this sort of technical group who's more privacy orientated, half of you leave it on, including me, leave it on the entire time, which is interesting. So I wonder for the general populace what the percentages are. I imagine it's going to be much more that leave it on. Because here's the other thing. What's the default state? Because most people are going to stick with the default state. And the default state, to the best of my knowledge, is it is on. So anyway, that was Bluetooth. I thought that was interesting. So there's that. Now, another thing here, breaches. So I've actually loaded four different data breaches into Have I Been Pwned this week. And just incidentally, I find that data breaches track along at about one every 4 days, data breaches that go into Have I Been Pwned. This is based on several years worth of data. So about one every 4 days. So to do four in a week is a rather busy week. Indonesia's largest online store, which is Tokopedia, had over 12 million unique email addresses posted. There's about 15 million records, but not everyone had had an email address against it. And apparently that was a sample of about 100 million records. So Tokopedia, apparently a big thing. They've got breached. Also included names, genders, dates of birth, and SHA-2384 password hashes, which is really unusual to see in a data breach. 21% already in have been pwned. I would put an Indonesian system in the category of something a bit more localized than what most of the data is in have been pwned, so low percentage. I'm just going to read back up my list here because Abram asked a question. What do you do when passwords in a breach are hashed using something other than SHA-1, say MD5? Would you even add it to have been pwned? Yeah. Evidently. So it's the hashing algorithm has got nothing to do with my decision about whether I add it to have I been pwned or not. I don't go through cracking hashes or doing anything like that. I'm just interested in who's been exposed. And then in a case like this, I say, look, in the metadata for the breach, passwords were one of the classes of data that were exposed. In the description in both the tweet and the description of the breach itself, I explain what the hashing algorithm was in case people want to get a bit of a sense of just how bad it was. So speaking about just how bad it was, let's move on to the next one, which was Vietnamese site Thai Liao had 7.3 million records breached in November and posted to a popular hacking site. So this happens a lot. Very often these things are posted to forums where people are like, hey, here's some data, have it. And everyone's like, yes, thank you, thank you. And they just continue to exchange and circulate this data. Email addresses. So this is, email addresses, dates of birth, genders, passwords stored as unsalted MD5 password hashes. So one of the joys of having an unsalted hash is it's very easy to establish very quickly if it's legit. And I'll tell you one of the things I do, and I think I actually did it in this case, is I took the name of the site, I literally just Google for create MD5 hash, and you find the first website that creates MD5 hash, plug the name of the site in, take the hash, search for it in the passwords of the site, and if they're there, well, there's a very interesting data point, a very interesting correlation that people were actually creating hashes or passwords rather, which then created hashes, using the name of the site. To Abram's question here, do I ever encounter argon in breaches? No. I don't think there's a single one. If you go to have I been pwned, to who's been pwned, look for that. Incidentally, also PBKDF2, like really, really rare. Bcrypt, exceptionally common as far as adaptive hashing algorithms go. And I'll get to a Bcrypt one in a moment too. Indian marketplace Elanic had 2.3 million email addresses breached and posted to a hacking forum. Now, this one, if I'm honest, kind of upset me a little bit because I disclosed it to them. And as far as I could tell from their explanation or their response to me, it was news to them. They didn't know about it. And I went, here's the hacking forum. Here it is. And then they went very quiet. And I said, hey, have you notified your customers? Is there a public disclosure notice that I can link to? And they said, quote, we will not have as such any communication and public disclosure to customers. So they're covering it up. I mean, except for the fact that 2.3 million addresses are now in have I been pwned, and I tweeted about it publicly and put it in the Facebook post and it's searchable. But, you know, other than that, they're covering it up. Not bitter at all. Next one, which was actually handled much more professionally, is Almon. So I was not aware of Almon before, but Almon is a travel app creator. They had 777,000 unique email addresses breached in Jan, I also disclosed that one. It was also being shared on a popular hacking forum for many, many weeks from memory, if not months, before I got in touch with them. And then the first I know about it is when I got in touch with them. And one of the things is going like entirely off script here that frankly pisses me off a little bit is there's a whole bunch of people that know about this and no one tells the company. Like if someone had gone to the company, hey guys, did you know that your data is over here on this forum and people are exchanging it? Like it'd kind of be nice just to let them know. They did store passwords as Bcrypt hashes, work factor 10 for those who are curious. Almost every work factor I see is 10, incidentally. 73% of those were already in have I been pwned. That is a very typical ratio these days. So there you go, four different breaches, four different stories, four different ways of storing passwords too, which is interesting. Okay, so that was data breaches. Now, have I been pwned itself? For the most part, I don't pay a lot of attention to, just realized as I was saying it, that sounds bad. I don't pay a lot of attention to the performance side of have I been pwned because it just ticks along. So even recently when I had that money show in the UK, send a huge amount of traffic through to it, it spiked, like I had a huge uptick in usage, but because effectively the front page is served almost entirely from Cloudflare cache because it doesn't do anything. And when you hit the API or the search page on the front, which then hits an API, all that's served from Azure serverless stuff, which just scales directly to my wallet and that's it, I never notice anymore. So it usually takes something else to see when there's been an uptick. And in fact, the thing that was the catalyst is whenever I get a donation on Have I Been Pwned, I have to go and reconcile it in my accounting software because I do have to pay tax on the donations that are given. And I was in there the other day and I was like, wow, there's like more reconciliation to do than usual. So I went and checked the figures. And in the month of April, well, actually, I'll do this the other way. So far for this year, in January, 40,000 people subscribed to the notification service. February was 33,000. March was 25,000. April was 62,000 people, which is a really, really big uptick. So then I went and started pulling on the figures. And I noticed that the unique visitors is regularly tracking at over 200,000 a day now. So I was always quoting, particularly during the year 2019, when I was going the whole Svalbard stuff as well, always quoting a figure of about 150,000 a day. It is consistently averaging 200 now. In fact, it peaked at 352,000 one day. Yeah, like the day before I took the screen cap. So who knows what it's done since then, because it was a few days ago. So that was interesting. And then I've got another graph in here, which is Google Analytics. And I haven't put the actual numbers on the Google Analytics graph. And the reason I chop these off is that if I put like Cloudflare figures, which is traffic that actually goes through the edge, like real world traffic, everyone goes through there, whether they've got an ad blocker or not, whether they've got a pie hole or not, whether they're black holing DNS through some other means, it records the uniqueness of everything. So that to me is a much more reliable number. And then when you go to Google Analytics, people have, in my case, a pie hole or ad blockers or whatever else, and the numbers just go crazy. But what is interesting is trends, because assuming a consistent usage of things that block Google Analytics over time, there's a really, really clear uptick in the trend. And then I also pulled pwned passwords. So pwned passwords, very recently I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like we're peaking at 10 million queries to pwned passwords a day. And it was only last month sometime that I passed 500 million queries in a month. And now it's over 600 million queries in the last month. And we're peaking at 26 million in a day. And again, super cool. I don't even notice it. Just about all hits Cloudflare's cache. It's a high 90% margin that hits that, which is great. So how are pwned tracking up? Now, here's another interesting one. I asked this question on Twitter. And again, I feel like things often just get missed in Twitter. And this wasn't one of these cases where people are just being dicks in replies. I don't think I made myself clear enough. I said, I get emails every single day along the lines of, I've been hacked, someone is digitally extorting me, I have a cyber stalker, all looking for help even at a price. I don't answer, I can't scale myself to this. Are there any reputable global companies I can refer people to? And I was actually tempted to put a screen cap, a redacted screen cap, of course, of one of the emails I got. And then I just felt that there was just a bit too much information there and the person could have been a bit upset about that. But I get these all the time. Now, the replies that I started to get from people were very much around, oh, it's sextortion and it's cyber stalking and it's domestic violence related and things like this. There's a portion of that, but I think that's a much, 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 much smaller amount. It's much more frequently things like someone has taken over my account, I can't get back in. I'm getting one of those phishing emails which says I've been enjoying my own company at my PC and they've used the camera and seen me and, hey, there's my real password in the extortion email. It's just loads and loads of stuff like that. And the thing is that I can't reply to these without beginning a dialogue that, frankly, I don't have the time for. So I just file them all away. But I'd really love to have a service out there somewhere where people could actually follow it up. And it could be commercial. I think that's fine. And I, my expectation when I raised this tweet is that someone, and let's say just as a hypothetical, it was going to be like the Norton of the world or the McAfee or something like this was going to pop up and go, yes, we have a service like this. And then I'd have to sort of look at it and go, okay, is this actually the sort of thing I want to refer people to? But I think there must be some sort of consumer-facing service which is orientated towards people like this. But yeah, so far nothing has popped up. Lots of individual people have popped up and said, yeah, like I do a bit of this for fun. That's not really what I'm looking for, but particularly if you pop up and you've got like a weird avatar and a strange handle and then some mother of five in the middle of nowhere who barely knows how to use a computer. I know I've just like massively generalized, but just bear with me here. someone who just does not live in that world, I can't sort of go, yeah, just go speak to rando person on the internet and they'll be fine. You know, it needs to be something a bit more professional than that. Burton, no coffee. I'm not drinking coffee because it's 5:45. Now, why I'm not drinking beer is probably a better question. And as soon as I'm finished with this, I'm going to fix that. Actually, I think it's going to be gin and tonic, sitting there watching the sunset over the water, if there's still sun at the moment. Regardless, so anyway, I haven't had a good answer to that. Slight change of topic while I'm reading the comments here. So Mike was asking about Ghost. So both Mike and I use Ghost to host our blogs. Ghost got themselves a little bit pwned this week, not a lot, only a little bit. So they use SaltStack, which orchestrates a lot of their infrastructure deployment. And SaltStack had a vulnerability. Interestingly, someone from F-Secure picked up on it, I think about a week ago, about Friday last week, and tweeted about, you know, this could be bad. It seems like it was F-Secure that identified this. So, yeah, good on them. So Ghost got done. A few other services got done. As far as I know, and based on Ghost's disclosure as well, the impact was very minimal. I just can't remember exactly what they said it was, because I remember looking at it going, it really doesn't matter. I did get an alert from Cloudflare saying that my Origin website was unreachable for a very short period of time, but I haven't seen any impact. I guess it wasn't so much directly a Ghost issue as opposed to an issue in a dependency, but I think I remember from the Ghost disclosure something along the lines of, look, we did have a piece of infrastructure facing the public internet which didn't need to be. So, yeah, best on us, not too bad. So to the question here about Ghost got owned, SaltStack got owned, people using SaltStack consequently got owned. So, yes, Ghost got owned kind of indirectly. If someone finds the Ghost disclosure, maybe just drop a link in the comments here. Today is World Password Day. It's the one day you need to get your password right, apparently. That's funny. This is so predictable. Like journalists pop up and they go, World Password Day is coming out. What advice would you give people? Same as last year, same as the year before, same as every other time. Everyone's still doing the same stupid shit and we just keep coming around having the same discussion on the same day every year. So wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to do that next year? Not going to happen. So look, that is pretty much it this week. And again, for those of you joining a little bit later, I decided to do this via this forum because honestly, it does, being live, of course, it does solve a heap of drama, because normally what I do is I have this microphone here and I run Audacity and I record audio, and then I have my iPhone here, well, up there, so it points at me and I record video. And then even just getting video off an iPhone on a PC is a bloody pain in the ass. And I get that and I get this and I put them in Premiere and I line them all up and I take out the audio from the iPhone and I add the audio from Audacity from the good mic, and then I crop the end bits, and then you basically end up with what you've got here, except with a lot more work and with no live interaction. So look, if this works well, I will actually create the blog post for it. I'll probably do it tomorrow. Create the blog post for it, put it on my website, embed this video. If this works well, let me know in the comments there and maybe I'll keep doing this, because I suspect it's the same end result production quality, except I get engagement and it reduces the workload on me rather significantly. And maybe what I'll do is I'll just sometimes do this in my afternoon. So people watching this at the moment are probably in Europe, UK. And sometimes I'll just do it over Friday morning, and then that will be more suitable for the US, and we just mix it up a bit. But we're all trying to figure out how to do things a bit differently at the moment. So maybe this is just one of those things. So thanks very much for watching. I am going to go and grab that nice cold drink and watch the sunset go down now. And I'll do this again next week. See ya.